Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. Beth Emmanuel is committed to proclaiming the vital gospel message of the coming kingdom of heaven. If you share our passion for this message, please support this teaching ministry and messianic community with your prayers and financial contributions. To learn how, click on the support tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
We're looking at the second sign tonight, and so you're going to find it. I've got the DHE here, the Deutsch Hebrew English Gospels, and we're going to find this at the end of chapter 4 of John. And so what's happened since the miracle at Cana is the master has gone up to Jerusalem for Passover, and some of these new disciples that are following him accompanied him on that trip. And while in Jerusalem, he started to do more miracles. He started to do some healings. And just a little bit here, a little bit there. And his disciples started to immerse people in imitation of John the Immerser. And pretty soon, his disciples were immersing more people than John was immersing. So what this means is his popularity soared almost instantaneously in his arrival in Judea and Jerusalem. And so much so that one of the notable men, one of the most prestigious and important men in the city, Nicodemus, came to meet with him privately and question him and try to get a handle on who he was. And he said, he even admitted to him, he said, "We know you're from God. If you weren't from God, you couldn't be doing these signs and these miracles." And this situation, however, wasn't what Yeshua was looking for. And so he decides to head back to the Galilee. And these disciples, they also got to get back to the Galilee. I mean, they don't live up here. And they haven't even committed to be his followers yet. They're just hanging with him so far. They've had some good times, but it's time to head back to the Galilee. So they go down the middle, down the patriarchal ridge route, because he's going to head back to Nazareth. They're going to head back to Capernaum, where they're from. They're on the north. Yeah, we should look at our map. Let's look at our map. Oh, the big map, Israel in the time of Yeshua, page 468. All right, so you see where Jerusalem is, Yerushalayim, near the center and the bottom. Find the Dead Sea and look to the left, and you'll see Yerushalayim. All right? So now go straight north, like just go straight north, and you're going to go past Ramah, past Bethel, where Jacob had his vision. There's a ridge. This is like a watershed ridge that goes, we call this the patriarchal highway because Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were always running up and down this road. So you go past Bethel, and then we're going past Shiloh. Remember what happened at Shiloh. That's where Eli was, and the tabernacle was set up there. And then you see we're just still going straight north. You see Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal, all right? So what's Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal? That's the blessings and curses mountains from the Torah and from the book of Joshua. And there's a little village off to the side. So you see the little village of Suchar. You see Suchar? Is the village where he stops by a well and there, a woman comes out. So he's in Samaritan territory now. A woman comes out, meets the woman at the well. The disciples go to buy some food. He has a conversation with the woman at the well. Then he ends up staying there in that village of Suchar for 2 days. We read that after that 2 days, he goes on into the Galilee. So where is he going to go into the Galilee? Just keep going north, past Guinea. You know what Guinea is today? Jenin. You ever hear of Jenin? If you just keep going north, you're going to be up into the Jezreel Valley. And you can get to Nazareth, and you can get to Cana, and so forth. So you can get to Cana, and then he could take a right and go to Capernaum, or not. So we're going to find out what he does, because you know, we know his disciples are going to Capernaum. All right, so now going back to our text, you kind of got, you see the relationships, the geographical relationships. Let's go back to our text. And this is Yochanan chapter 4 on page 343. We'll start in verse 43. At the end of 2 days, he went out from there, that's out from Sychar, or the village of Suchar. He went out from there to go to the Galil, for Yeshua himself testified that a prophet has no honor in his native land. All right, does that make sense? Yeah, he says, I'm gonna go to the Galilee because, after all, a prophet has no honor in his native land where I'm from, and I'm from the Galilee.
So he's going to the Galilee.
Yeah, he's going into the Galilee.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
It doesn't seem to make sense until you remember he's leaving Jerusalem because of his popularity, like how quickly the crowds were forming around him. And what you'll find if you pay attention to the Gospels is Yeshua spends most of his time avoiding crowds, trying to avoid big followings, big collections of people. So, for example, well, we'll talk about that when we get to the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000. So he spends most of his time avoiding these big crowds because he wasn't here to start, you know, Yeshua wasn't here to start a new movement, an uprising, or a new sect even, or certainly not a new religion. He was here to bring Israel to repentance, and he was here to, you know, to do the task that he had been sent to do, to proclaim this message of repentance. But he wasn't at this time ready to start a political movement. So he's trying to avoid accidentally starting a revolution, and he's also trying to avoid, by avoiding the crowds, he's trying to avoid getting crucified, right? You know, because what's going to happen once you start drawing large crowds? Well, you see what happens to John the Baptist when he starts drawing large crowds. He gets arrested and beheaded. So Yeshua says that a prophet has no honor in his own land, so he entered the Galilee. And the people of the Galilee took him in. You know, it doesn't work out as he was hoping, because they saw all that he had done in Jerusalem in the days of the festival, for they also had gone up to celebrate the festival. So his reputation has preceded him. He gets into the Galilee, finds out, oh, I'm already famous here too. So he's moving around the Galilee. I think his disciples, his followers, have returned to their respective villages. What are those respective villages? Bethsaida on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, Capernaum on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, and Cana. Cana, where he did that miracle, the first sign, right? So he goes back to Cana, this must be with Nathaniel Bartholomew. The disciple from Cana. So it says in verse 46, Yeshua came a second time to Cana, which is in the Galilee, the place where he had made the water into wine. There was a man who was a servant of the king, whose son was sick in Capernaum. Okay, so now, Capernaum is Capernaum. It just means, Capernaum means the village of Nahum. I need to set this up for you so you understand what's going on. I'm suggesting that his disciples from Capernaum have already returned to Capernaum. Yeshua is staying in Cana, probably with Nathanael for now. Back in Capernaum, which is about 20 miles from Cana, 20 miles to the east, there's a servant, or perhaps a family member — the Greek is ambiguous here, it could be a family member, it could be a servant — of King Herod. He's not really a king. He wants to be a king, but Rome hasn't made him a king and doesn't want to make him a king. But he's the one who will have John beheaded. Okay, just to place him in who he is. And he is Rome's man over the Galilee. So his capital is on the Lake Galilee. It's the city of Tiberias. Up in Capernaum, he has an official, or perhaps a Herodian, a family member. Herod had this huge, huge family, a lot of nepotism among kings, you know. Could be both. Could be an official and a family member. And he's living in the little village, the fishing village of Capernaum, administering there. And he has this son who falls sick, right? This boy is in trouble. You can tell he's perhaps going to die. But there are these guys that live in town who say, oh, you know what? We just got back from Jerusalem, and we have spent the last several weeks with the Nazarene, Yeshua from Nazareth. If only he was here, you know what he would do? He would lay his hands on this boy, and he would heal him. We saw him do that kind of stuff. I'm thinking they're talking this up. Because somehow, this guy, who is in Capernaum, finds out that Yeshua is in Cana. That's 20 miles away. And so it says, when he heard that Yeshua had come from Yehuda to the land of Galil, he went to him and asked him to come down and heal his son, for he was about to die. Yeshua said to him, now this is a surprise to me that he says this to him, if you do not see signs and wonders, you will not believe. Other versions of the Greek translate it as, if you people do not see signs and wonders, you will not believe. It seems like a strange thing to say to the father who has come to request this of Yeshua. He's traveled 20 miles. How long does it take to walk 20 miles?
A day.
Yeah.
Walking most of the way here.
You could do it in a day. You could do it in a day if you're motivated. Might be a day and a half. But you could do it in a day if you really pushed it. We do know about what time it is. It's about 1 o'clock in the afternoon right now. So I'm thinking he walked all night.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about 1 o'clock in the afternoon when he's having this conversation. I mean, it's just a strange thing to say. This guy has walked all night to come and ask that Yeshua would come and heal his son. And Yeshua says, if you people don't see signs and wonders, you will not believe. What's going on here? So what I'm speculating is that at about this, when this guy comes and gets this audience with Yeshua, that there is a crowd that has formed and wants to go and see the miracle, because these are the people of Cana saw the first sign. They saw the water turn to wine. They've heard the reports. And now they're looking for more signs and wonders. Yeshua's not here to do signs and wonders. You know, he's not a magician, right? And so I believe he's not addressing the man. Rather, he's addressing the onlookers. He's addressing the crowd. And this is going to become a theme through his ministry. Because the Torah says that, you know, we shouldn't be seeking after signs and wonders. Somebody comes and does signs and wonders, that's great. But Yeshua's point, when he says, you know, shouldn't be seeking after signs and wonders, it should be about what is he saying? What is he teaching? What is his message? That's where the question is. That's what we should believe based upon his message. Is he bringing Israel to repentance and so forth? Right? But by the end of the Gospel of John, he says, if you don't believe my words, at least believe because of the signs and the wonders. Right? But in any case, so it seems to me like he's already expressing a little bit of frustration with the predicament, the realization that the people are going to be pursuing signs and wonders. And this is a theme that we'll see through the Gospel of John. So then it says, the man who was a servant of the king said to him, my master, please come down before my son dies. And Yeshua said to him, go, your son is alive. Which is these words, your son is alive, your son lives, is the same thing that Elijah said to the widow of Zarephath. Yeshua actually mentions Elijah going to the widow of Zarephath. When he is in Nazareth, And he finds that the people won't believe in him because a prophet has no honor in his own hometown. They're not going to listen to him, and they're not going to listen to his interpretation on Isaiah. And it says that he found that he was even not able to do many miracles there either because of the people's lack of faith, right? And so then he says to them, he says, you know, a prophet's without honor in his own hometown, in his own land, in his own hometown. Why do you think Elijah went to Phoenicia? That's where Zarephath is. And healed the widow, or raised the widow's son. Weren't there any widows with sons in Israel? I mean, this just makes them madder, you know, when he says this. But he's actually, and then it says, he left there and he went to Capernaum. So what that's alluding, what he's alluding to, he's not saying I'm going to leave Israel and go up to, I'm going to leave the country like Elijah did. Right? Elijah was hiding. Rather, he's saying, I'm leaving Nazareth, and I'm going to those followers that I've picked up from Capernaum. And I'm going to, I gave you your chance here. You said no, no thank you. So I'm leaving, and that's what he does. He moves out. He moves out of Nazareth, and he moves into Peter's house in Capernaum. Anyway, so the connection that I'm making here with the story of Elijah, when Elijah says to the widow of Zarephath, your son lives, when he resurrects that boy, we see another connection here. Your son lives, he says, to the man from Capernaum. So it's kind of just went in a big circle. Does it make sense? Yeshua said to him, go, your son lives. And it says, the man believed the word that Yeshua spoke to him, and he left. Now, here's the interesting part of this miracle. When he came down, his servants encountered him and gave him the good news that his son was alive. So what's happening here is he's on his way back now. I don't think he's slept, but now he's just turned around and he's heading back to Nazareth. He's going to walk the whole 20 miles again. Well, he gets about halfway and he meets his servants from his household. They're coming to find him. And it says, his servants encountered him and gave him the good news that his son was alive. He inquired of them that the hour that he felt better. And they said to him, yesterday at the seventh hour, the fever faded. His father knew that this was the hour when Yeshua had said to him, your son is alive. And so he believed, and so did his entire house. And now here's the key verse. This was the second sign that Yeshua did when he came from Yehuda to the land of Galilee. It's not the second miracle that he did in the Gospel of John. We know that he was doing a lot of miracles up in Jerusalem. But this is the second sign. Why? That's the question for us. Why is this a sign? And I'm not sure I can answer that necessarily, but we'll ponder it a little bit. Ponder it just a little bit. Before we get to that pondering, there's two things I should point out. One is that according to many scholars, we have a different version of this same story in the Synoptic Gospels. Are you familiar with that version of the story? That would be the healing of the centurion's son.
From a distance.
Right. So let's go read one of those narratives. Let's go over to Luke's version, Luke 7. Luke chapter 7. See how that reads. And now you're going to compare, okay? Because what the scholars are saying is, look, you have an oral tradition about a particular healing. It gets recorded in one gospel this way, it gets recorded in the other gospel that way. You know, some of the details might have shifted, but it's essentially the same story. Luke chapter 7, on 231 in this Delitzsch Hebrew English gospel. It said, after he had finished speaking with all his servants in the hearing of the people, he came to Capernaum, to Capernaum. A servant of one of the centurions was deathly ill, and he was very dear to him. He heard the news of Yeshua, so he sent him men from the elders of the Yehudim and asked him to come and save his servant. They came to Yeshua and pleaded strongly with him and said, "It is appropriate for you to carry out this request because he, although he's a Roman centurion, he loves our people and built the synagogue for us." So isn't this apparently a wealthy Roman centurion stationed there in Capernaum, and to, you know, to engender the goodwill of the people that he's appointed over, he made a sizable donation to a synagogue building program. Now it's kind of great is that this is the synagogue of Yeshua, you know, that this is that's in Capernaum. We can go to that synagogue to this very day. It's so we know which synagogue they're talking about. Yeshua went with them. When he drew near the house, the centurion sent his friends to him, saying, "My master, please do not be burdened by me, for I am not worthy for you to come in the shade of my roof. On account of this, I do not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But please say a word, and my boy will be healed. For I myself am a man placed under authority, and there are soldiers under my command. I tell one, go, and he goes, and another one, come, and he comes. Then my servant, do this, and he does it." Yeshua heard his words and was amazed by them. He turned and said to the crowd following him, "I say to you, even in Israel, I have not found faith as great as this." The messengers returned to the house and found the sick servant, and he was healed. So here's the first, is this the same story? Well, let's look at what's similar first. Capernaum stories. Both of these stories take place in Capernaum, sort of. Well, but on the one hand, it's an official that's a member of the household of Herod or one of Herod's servants. In the other story, it's a Roman centurion. Both of them prominent administrators in the town. Okay, both of them would be political figures in the town. So that's similar. In the one story in John, the servant of Herod has a son who is deathly ill. The Roman centurion has a servant who is deathly ill. All right. So, but in both cases, we have a deathly ill person. In the story in John, the servant of Herod travels all the way to Cana, 20 miles to Cana, himself. He says, I'm going to go myself. He doesn't send his servants. He has servants. We see he could have sent servants, but he doesn't send his servants. He himself goes, right? In the story in Luke, the centurion does not go. He says, "I'm not even worthy to go." He knows about Jewish scruples, and he knows about purity issues and so forth, and he knows about that that if Yeshua enters his house, he'll be ritually unclean, and so forth. So he says, "You don't even need to come into my house." Whereas in John, the servant of Herod is imploring him, he's pleading with him, "Please come down, please come," and Yeshua won't come. In this story, in the story in Luke, he's saying, "You don't need to come." Yeshua's on his way. He doesn't hesitate. He's on his way, and he sends word and says, "You don't need to come into my house. You don't need to come." So, what do you think? Same story? I don't think so. I think we have two different stories. Very similar in some of their details. The main similarity is the long distance healing. There's enough similarity that scholars are justified in saying, couldn't this be the same story that's just been told two different ways? That's a reasonable assumption. But I prefer to see them as two different stories, because some of the key details are so opposite. Not just the fact that in the one case Yeshua is in Cana, and in the other case he's in Capernaum, seems, you know, like a significant geographical problem if we tried to reconcile the stories. Anyway, that's enough about that. You can have your own opinion on it. It really doesn't matter to me. But I like to believe that we have two different stories here. Speaking of these different stories, I'll tell you some other interesting stories. This is a story about Hananiah ben Dosa. Hananiah ben Dosa was a disciple of Yochanan ben Zakkai, so that gives you an idea of when he lived. Yochanan ben Zakkai lived in the apostolic era, so Hananiah ben Dosa would be in the late apostolic era. But he was part of a Hasidic Galilean movement. Well, they weren't Hasidic like we speak about Hasids today. It was a different kind of Hasidim. The Hasidim in the Galilee in those days, they weren't a formal sect in any sense. It is more of a way of life. It describes a way of life. What kind of way of life? Well, they renounced worldly wealth. They lived in self-imposed poverty. They stressed ethics and musar, you could say. They stressed musar, childlike in their faith, intentionally so. So they would even refer to God as Abba, Father, you know, like our master. So, you know, like the story of Choni the circle drawer, who says, you know, to break the drought, he draws a circle in the ground and he says, Abba, I'm not going to leave this circle until you make it rain, until you bring rain. Like that kind of it's really pure, simple faith. And they had reputations as miracle workers. And so a lot of scholars say, if you want to know what kind of Jew Yeshua was, he wasn't a Pharisee. He had a lot in common with the Pharisees. Theologically, he was a Pharisee, but he certainly didn't behave as a Pharisee. He wasn't a Sadducee. Obviously, he wasn't a Sadducee. Wasn't a zealot. He didn't belong to any of these affiliations. He wasn't a part of the priestly class or anything like this. He wasn't a Herodian. He wasn't a politics guy. You know, so what kind of Jew was he? He was a Hasid. He was a Galilean Hasid. We're not talking like Hasids today, although there's a lot of similarity. It's the same name. It just means devout one. You know, Hasid means a devout one. But this sounds like him. This sounds like him. He lives an austere life, forsaking worldly life, wealth, giving their possessions to the poor, stressing ethics above halakha and academics, subscribing to a simple childlike faith in miracles, referring to God in personal, intimate, and familial terms like my father and Abba, and has a reputation as a miracle worker, and people seek them out for healings and exorcisms and answers to prayer. That sounds like Yeshua. Right, and so we know a few of their names, like this particular character, Hananiah ben Dosa, is someone who is from the Galilee. And he would have been a boy, I think, while Yeshua is at work. He would have been a boy or a young man while Yeshua is at work in the Galilee. The chances that he saw Yeshua, that he knew Yeshua, maybe saw Yeshua's miracles, maybe ate from the feeding of the 5,000, very high. Very likely that he would have been one of these. Anyway, so here's two stories of Hananiah ben Dosa. Once it happened that the son of Rabban Gamliel was sick, he sent two disciples of the sages to Rabbi Hananiah ben Dosa to ask him to seek mercy for him. When he saw them, he went up to his roof and prayed for mercy for him. When he came down, he said to them, "Go, the fever has left him." They asked him, "How do you know? Are you a prophet?" He replied, "I am not a prophet, nor am I the son of a prophet. But I have learned from experience that if my prayer is fluent in my mouth, I know that it is accepted. But if not, I know that it is rejected." They sat down and wrote a note of the time and the hour. When they came to Rabban Gamliel, he said to them, "By the temple worship," which, by the way, our master tells us not to swear by the temple worship, but he swears, "By the temple worship, that is the exact time. At that very moment, the fever left him, and he asked for water to drink." That's in Tractate Brachot. So you can see the parallels to the story. We have a miracle worker, a known miracle worker. We have an important person who has a sick son, and then sends, in this case he sends his servants, doesn't go personally, to request the healing. The miracle worker says, "Okay, it's done," at a distance. they make a note of the time, they corroborate, the time checks out, and the boy is healed at a distance. Isn't that amazing? Amazing parallel. Here's another story of Hananiah ben Dosa. It happened once that the daughter of Nechoniah, the well digger, fell into a large cistern. Well, you know, that's what his job is, to dig cisterns, all right? So his daughter falls into this cistern. People went and told Rabbi Hananiah ben Dosa about it. During the first hour that she was in the well, he said to them, "Shalom." In the second hour, he again said, "Shalom." But he's praying. You see, he's praying for this girl who's stuck in a well, like deep in a well. During the third hour, he said to them, "She is up." They asked him, "How do you know? Are you a prophet?" And he answered, "I am not a prophet, nor am I the son of a prophet. But why should the work in which a righteous man is engaged be the cause of tragedy to his child?" It's another very similar story. Not a healing this time, but nevertheless, he knew, and his prayer was answered. He knew when his prayer was answered. So, I submit these two stories to you as parallels to the story of Yeshua, and not only parallels to the story of Yeshua, but also to put him more into his context, so you have some sense of the world in which he moved. And these were men of great deeds, men of faith, men of deed. It begs the question for us then, in what sense is this a sign, this miracle that happened? Why is it not just another miracle? I mean, obviously it's a miracle. But what makes it a sign? Because it says, this was the second sign that Yeshua did when he came from Yehuda to the land of the Galil. And I'm not prepared to answer that question. I just thought you'd enjoy pondering about it with me. I don't really have an answer. But we can speak in a more general sense about why healing itself should be considered a sign, even though it's not as if every time he healed someone, they said, "Oh, it's a sign," or something. But you might consider healing a sign. Why was turning water into wine a sign? In what sense was that a sign? It's a sign of what? A sign that he is the Messiah, because he has access to the wine from the Messianic era. So who else has access to the king's, to his wine cellar? His wine cellar in the kingdom. Okay, so we understand why the turning of the water into wine was a sign. Here's why healing would be a sign. Because in the Messianic era, we're supposed to have a new vitality, a new revitalization of the physical state of all things, right? So the earth is going to be healed. The creation is going to be healed. And even the dead, the righteous dead, will be raised. And there's a saying that, a question, if somebody has an injury or a sickness or something like that, or it's some sort of injury, or would that injury... Would they, and they're resurrected from the dead, do they still have the injury or not? And the sages said, you know, that's a good question. And this is just an opinion, because nobody really knows. But the opinion was that, yes, if you, for example, were missing an arm, and you're raised from the dead, you'd still be missing the arm. And then God will heal you. So first the resurrection, then the healing. And so in that regard, if that's correct, that then healing is a component of the kingdom, a component of the Messianic era. Our master said this. Now he leaves Cana and he goes up to Nazareth. That's how I understand it. That he leaves Cana after this incident. He ends up in Nazareth. He comes to Nazareth. I'm leaving John now, but just to give us some context about why this is a sign. I'm going over to Luke chapter 4. So you see here in verse 14 of Luke chapter 4, he returned to the Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and the news of him went out in all of the plain. That sounds like exactly where we were at in John, where he returned to the Galilee, and news about him is circulating, right? So he goes to Cana and so forth. And then, as it says here in verse 15, he taught in their synagogues and everyone praised him. Verse 16, he came to Netzaret where he grew up. And according to his custom, he went to the synagogue on the day of Shabbat and arose to read in the scroll. The scroll of Yeshua, the prophet, was given to him. And he opened the scroll and found the place where it is written. So you see, he read the Torah, he rose to read in the scroll, and then he reads the Haftarah. So what does that tell us? It tells us he had the maftir, right? So he opened the scroll and found the place where it is written, the Spirit of Hashem is upon me in order to anoint me to bring good news to the humble. He has sent me to care for the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for exiles, and for the blind an opening release, to send the oppressed away free, to proclaim a year of favor for the Lord. So care for the brokenhearted is understood as healing. He's bringing healing. He's opening the eyes of the blind. He says, I'm proclaiming the favor of the Lord. And then it says, when he rolled up the scroll, he returned it to the Chazan and sat. The eyes of all who were in the synagogue were focused on him. He began saying to them, today this passage is fulfilled in your hearing. All of them commended him and were amazed by the words of grace which were coming from his mouth. They said, is he not the son of Yosef? He said to them, look, you say this proverb to me, healer, heal yourself, just as we have heard you have done in Capernaum. Huh? When did he do healing in Capernaum? He hasn't been there. Yeah. It has to be that incident from John. Right. Do the same here in your native town. So he said, amen, I say to you, a prophet is not despised unless he is in his native land. I tell you, there were many widows in Israel in the days of Eliyahu, when heaven was restrained for 3 years and 6 months. And there was a great famine throughout the land. But Eliyahu was not sent to any of them except to Zarephath, which is in Sidon, to a widowed woman. There were many Mitzarim in Israel in the days of Elisha the prophet, but not one of them was purified except for Naaman, the Arami. When everyone who was in the synagogue heard these words, they were filled with anger. They rose up, pushed him outside the city. They brought him to the top of the mountain upon which their town was built in order to throw him down. But he passed through in their midst and went on his way. He went down to Capernaum, a town of the Galilee, and he taught them on the Shabbat. And they were astonished at his teaching because his word was a word of authority. All right, that kind of brought it all together for us, didn't it? Don't you think? Yeah, there's a lot going on there. There's this tension between Nazareth and Capernaum that we see. And where is he going to base his ministry? Where is his ministry going to be based? Where is he going to reveal himself? Where is he going to reveal his signs? And so we see here that the sign of the healing in Capernaum was significant enough that they had heard of it in Nazareth. And he makes this statement in the Nazareth synagogue that these prophecies that Isaiah has been giving us about, you know, the healing of the lame and the eyes of the blind opening and release for captives and prisoners and the return of exiles, the year of the Lord's favor, that this is being fulfilled now. So this is what he's saying. These miraculous healings should be indications, should be serving as signs for the people to verify his message. It's still not clear to me why this particular healing is singled out as a sign, maybe more so than other healings he had done. Here's an important official, perhaps royalty, the son of a royal member of Herod's household.
Thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. If you're a virtual member of Beth Emanuel, consider praying about upgrading by coming home to Hudson, where we are building intentional Messianic Jewish community. The only thing missing is you.